time now, though, for our next guest. It's our gadget detective, Fevzy. Word to the wise, Fevzy, do not describe me as comfy, okay?
Is that what he did?
He called me comfy. I mean, his heart was in the right place, but never describe a woman as comfy. It's not top of her wish list.
Listen, even I, with my limited social skills, know not to do that.
Oh, love him. No, he's lovely. And it was one of those, as soon as he said it, you could see, he thought, oh, no, what am I?
It makes you sound like you're upholstered or something.
It makes me sound like a sofa, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not talking sofas. We are talking gadgetry. And you are here to answer any questions people might have if the technology in their life is letting them down somewhat. I also thought it might be useful as well if people got in touch if they're looking to buy gadgets as presents this Christmas. Because let's face it, if that is something you are thinking of, it can be a bit of a minefield. I mean, there's just so much choice.
That's right. And there are still Cyber Monday deals going today and in some cases even tomorrow.
Yeah. Now, what's your thoughts on all of that? Are these real discounts or are they slightly fabricated?
So there are real and very good discounts in amongst all the ones that are fake.
Right.
And there are tools that you can use. I don't know if we've mentioned it before, but there are tools, particularly when you look at things like Amazon, you can actually track the price history of a particular item that you're interested in.
Oh, that's
so
useful.
Before you buy it, you can just see, you know, say the last year or 2 years sometimes, of what the price has been, what's the highest it's ever been, what's the lowest it's in, what is it currently. And you can see that in some cases, for example, you know, they put the price up just before the offer and then they bring it back down again. Which is
naughty.
Just sharp practice. So there is that, and then so that is called camelcamelcamel.com.
Okay.
So what you do with that is you it only works on Amazon, unfortunately, but you cut and paste the URL, the address of the product from the Amazon website, and you drop it into Camel Camel Camel. So you paste it into there and then it gives you the history. The other thing that you can do is to try and work out whether the product is as good as the reviews say it is. Again, if you're looking on Amazon, there's a website called reviewmeta.com, R-E-V-I-E-W, meta, M-E-T-A.com. And again, you paste the link in there, and what it does is it strips out all the reviews that it suspects may not be genuine. And it gives you another rating based on that. So if you take out all the, you know, suspected fake reviews, how does it review then?
That's a good idea.
Some of them, you know, the bulk of them come up as fake reviews. Some of them, but others have got very few. Interestingly, sometimes when you take out the fake reviews, the genuine ones still give it a good review. And the reason for that is some companies, when they launch a new product, arrange for fake reviews, even though the product is good, because they want some reviews up, and then it proceeds to get good reviews. But that's not really ethical. So those two tools, at least for Amazon shopping, arm you as a consumer to try and really determine whether something is a good deal. And a good deal isn't just it's the best price, but it's something worth buying. And I would just say, as a piece of advice, you know, just don't be going to websites that just show you deals all the time, because the thing about those, you end up buying things you don't want or need, and that's not really a saving. That just, you know, uses up your money and takes up space in your home. You know, and it's really tempting. I've done that. I'm not even going to name the website, but there's websites full of deals, but they're essentially uncurated, and you end up buying things you don't want or
you
need.
You don't really need in your life, no. Dave from Borden's got in touch to say his son built a gaming computer with a neighbour. Mm-hmm. Windows 10 then told him to update, but ever since then, it's been crashing when he is gaming. The local computer shop say it's a problem with the power supply, but the computer isn't actually losing power. It just keeps crashing.
Right. Well, power supply issues can give rise to computers crashing, but I would say if the problem coincided with the updating of the version of Windows 10 software, then your culprit is more likely to be there. I mean, of course, it could be coincidental. I don't know if they've actually tested the power supply, but you see, gaming computers have very powerful graphics cards. They need several hundred watts of power just for the card sometimes, you know. And sometimes the power supply is incapable of delivering enough power to the graphics card or even the cards. Sometimes they can have two in there. So it can be an issue. But why that would necessarily start happening at that point, if it's a power supply problem, fine, you need to change the power supply. And I'd suggest go, you know, if you're looking at a gaming rig, go for something that's like 1,000 watts or something, because the thing about getting a powerful power supply, that's one that's capable of delivering more power, is that you don't have to use that power. It'll only draw what the system needs. But if it's doing it comfortably, it's going to run more efficiently and more reliably, and it's got some headroom should the requirement for power go up at any point. So that's number one. But I would start to look at things like driver issues. You know, so drivers are the little bits of software that allow all the different bits of a computer, which can be different in everyone's computer. Everyone's got a different processor and graphics and mice and things. So they all have drivers that allow them to communicate with Windows. What it might be is that the drivers may have been overwritten. So the thing to do is look at the error code it gives you when it crashes. You know, you get an error code. It will enable you to tell what piece of hardware has failed. And what you can do is go to the manufacturer's website, not the manufacturer of the graphics card, go to their support section and download the latest graphics drivers which are compatible with your version of Windows. So if you're running Windows 10 64-bit, then make sure you get the 64-bit drivers. By doing that, the problem may resolve, because I'm just suspicious that, you know, why would the power supply suddenly fail at the moment you upgraded to a new version of Windows 10? More likely to be a driver issue.
Okay, well, I hope that helps. Thank you for getting in touch, Dave. Anna's also got in touch to say, recently you discussed preserving privacy on Facebook, Fevzi, but what about Twitter? Anna says, I'm not a user, but I would like to know more.
Okay, so Twitter is different from Facebook in that Twitter allows you to set up essentially anonymous accounts. Facebook, because of its business model, the way it makes money, needs to know who you are so that they can target advertising to you meaningfully. So Facebook go to great lengths to stop you setting up an anonymous account, i.e. an account with a false name and so forth. And they go to great measures. And sometimes people who've set up fake Facebook accounts and under the guise of anonymity have written sort of things that they wouldn't want to write if it were known it was them, like if they've got extreme political views or something. Sometimes those people get unmasked by Facebook because they run algorithms on it, work out who they are, and then attach the name to the account. So that's something to be aware of. With Twitter, it's different. With Twitter, you can set up accounts without giving your correct details, and it will allow you to do that. So they will still have your IP address. So the IP address is like a unique number that says from which node on the internet you posted. Mm. If you allow it, it may have your location. If you allow the Twitter app to access location data on a mobile device, but you can turn that off. And that's one thing that I would do. The other thing that I would say to you is, if you are particularly concerned about privacy, you can run a piece of software called a VPN, which is a virtual private network. And in fact, if you are wanting to access Wi-Fi in public, you should certainly use a VPN on your mobile device, because otherwise people can use mobile access to hack into your device whilst you're, you know, sitting in a coffee shop or whatever. So a VPN is like, it allows you to maintain privacy. It provides, think of it as a tunnel between me and the website that I'm accessing, where I can send information down the tunnel, information can come back, but anyone looking in just sees the outside of the tunnel. They don't see who I am, what I'm doing. The other nice thing about VPNs, and I can't recommend this, but a quirk of how they work is that you can appear to be anywhere in the world that you want to appear to be. So if there are services that you want to access that are, you know, like Hulu in the States or something like Netflix America or whatever, people do that. And equally, people abroad pretend to be in the UK so they can access BBC content. So and they do that using VPNs. That's a sort of byproduct of how they work. But that's, if you were concerned about privacy generally, not just on Twitter, then I would say invest in a VPN. Try to pay for it rather than get a free one, and, you know, read reviews and do some research and find a good one, because not all VPNs are equal. I would do that. But Twitter is less of an issue. I mean, all social media is an issue, but Facebook is the real killer in terms of your privacy. They're the ones that will just put you through the mincer and squeeze out every bit of data they can out of you and then monetize it.
A bit of a cautionary tale as well. I know this is something that you've spoken about a lot in the past. And this is not having the same password for everything. One of my friends got done on this last week. Somebody managed to hack her Amazon account and ordered a load of stuff using her money. And luckily, the credit card company have been great and she's going to get that money back. But still, I mean, it's just, A, it's a horrible feeling to know that somebody's hacked into your account and ordered loads of stuff off your card. But also, it's something that can, I'm guessing, be avoided if you do have separate passwords for your different accounts.
Yeah. So let's say it was the Amazon account that was hacked. And so they've got your username, which is typically your email address, and your password that you've used for the Amazon. Now, that's bad enough they've gone to Amazon. But if you've used the same email address and password for your banking or your credit card or whatever, then you're in big trouble. And worse still, if you've used it on your email account. Because if they get control of your email account, they can reset all your other passwords. You know, how you say, oh, I forgot my password, send me a reset link. But they send a reset link to an email address that is compromised. They get the link before you do. They click on it, reset your password, lock you out, and then make hay with your money, as it were. So the key to this, and the reason why that happens, is because we're human and we can't remember a lot of passwords, and they tell us not to write them down. So there is no perfect solution to this, but under the circumstances, the least worst solution to this is to use password management software. So two of the main ones of that are software called LastPass, LastPass, one word, and also there's one called 1Password, number one, followed by the word password. Both of those have free versions, which are quite functional, and then paid for ones, which give you more functionality. What they do is a couple of things. First of all, for every service that you go to where you have to create a password, it generates for you you set the parameters on it, but it can be an impossible to read and remember password, but you never have to read or remember it. It will generate a unique one for you for every website and web service that you access. So they're all unique. You don't have to remember them, because what happens is you have one master password, which you do have to remember. That then unlocks the vault. And so you can then surf the internet like it was 1999, as they say, and not have to worry about passwords because they get auto-filled. But each of those passwords are secure and unique. So, even if you get one hack, that's not going to help them get into anything else. So, you know, that does mean that you have to be very careful with the master password. But what you can do is you can secure the master password, the vault, using what they call second factor authentication. So bear with me on this. So first factor is the password. That's something you know. And then the second factor can be something that you have. So, for example, it could be a text message to your smartphone, or it could be one of these little USB keys. There's a company called Yubico. They make the YubiKey, Y-U-B-I-K-E-Y. It looks like a little slim USB thumb drive, and you have to plug it in or tap it on your phone if you're using a phone. And what that does is it unlocks the vault only when the password and the key are present. So that way you've got a secure, nothing's 100%, but you've got a relatively secure system that enables you to have unique passwords for each site where you never have to remember your passwords again, which is, honestly, it's a liberation when you realise that, you know, the internet can be like that again. The only other thing that you can do if you want to really be belt and braces about it is generate and use different email addresses for each one. Now, there are services that do that, or another way that you can do it is, let's say you buy a domain name. So you buy, I don't know, alisonferns.com as a domain. You might have to pay a tenner a year for that.
Say. I want to do that. I'm going to see if that exists, alisonferns.com.
No, I've just bought it, sorry. but I'll sell it to you at a good price.
Yeah.
But what you can do with that is, once you own that domain, then you can have, any email address, because you can say anything at alisonferns.com will come to you. You set up what's called a bucket email address, so anything at alisonferns.com would come to you. So you could then use that to set up one for company X at alisonferns.com when you register with them, and company Y and company Z. So then you'll have not only a different password for each one, but a different email address for each one. And if they get hacked, if one of those companies gets hacked and doesn't tell you, you can potentially tell, because if you start getting spam email from companyy@alisonferns.com. You know that the only place that email was ever used was with that company,
and
therefore
them.
They've been compromised.
Mm.
And that's actually very interesting. It's when you do that, you learn how many companies get hacked and don't tell you.
Mm, absolutely. Still to come this afternoon, we've got Fevzi's gadget of the week. It's a pair of wireless earphones. Yep. Again, could well be something you're thinking of buying for someone's Christmas present or what have you. We have the latest on that. But of course, if you want to get in touch, if you've got a question for our gadget detective, you can call.
Call BBC Sussex.
0800 232 1045.
BBC Sussex.
Or you can text 81333, start your message with the word radio. Now, though, Seal and Crazy. Two, you're listening to Alison Ferns on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey. Still to come this afternoon, we're going to be finding out more about a brilliant local charity, Chailey Heritage Foundation, carrying out pioneering work, actually, in Sussex. We'll hear more on that shortly. But let us head back now to our gadget detective, Fevzi, because we have another question for you. This one is from Trev in Littlehampton. Trev says, is there an idiot's guide to downloading and uploading my old Android info into my new phone, which is an iPhone?
Hmm. Apple iPhones now have got an import mode to import data from Android phones, because obviously they want you to be able to do that.
So of course they do.
When you're setting it up, that's one of the options that you're given, is to import Android data. So that would be the obvious way of trying to do it if you already have the iPhone, you know, and you still got access to the old phone. The other thing I would say is, before you do any of that, I'd do a backup of the Android phone onto a laptop or desktop computer, a separate computer. And you can do that in one of a number of ways. There is various bits of third-party software that does it, but usually the manufacturer of the Android smartphone will have a tool that allows you to back up on there. And what you do is you go to the manufacturer's website, go to the support section, and you can normally download the latest version of that software. The software will normally run on the PC, so you run it, you attach the Android phone via a cable into the USB port, and you make a backup. And the reason for that is, if anything were to go wrong during the test, or in any event, even if you're going to continue to use your Android phone, you should still be backing it up. Apple make it very simple, because iTunes software still does that for Windows users. So if you've got a Windows PC with iTunes installed on it, as soon as you plug your iPhone into the desktop or laptop computer, it will automatically just do a full backup, which is really useful. And the first time it takes a while, because it's copying potentially everything.
Yeah.
But after that, it will only need to copy the differences, so it will become quicker. And we should always do that, because phones are now so much more, Alison, than just telephones. They are handheld computers, and we do so many things on there. And we have photos on there that, you know, the number of people I've spoken to over the years, and it's actually heartbreaking that people have got photos of loved ones who then pass on.
Mm.
And they don't have, you know, then they lose the phone, or the phone breaks, or, you know, and they're not sure if they can get it back. And sometimes they can, but often they cannot. It's just sometimes it's just impossible, particularly if the phone's been stolen or lost. So the importance of backing it up. I mean, what I just say to people, and I'm not trying to preach to anyone, because believe me, I've lost really valuable things, and it still hurts me when I think about it. But, you know, you just think about what is on your phone now, what is on your phone, what is on your tablet, what is on your PC, and think, you know, what would happen if that went today, if it was suddenly not there? What is on there that would cause me a problem? Is it the only place I've got my password stored? Is it those photos? Is it the novel I've been working on for 2 years and don't have another copy of? You know, all these things. Or just emails. You know, you got this email, you can't recover the money that you're owed because you've lost the email and the details. And, you know, it can just be so much more expensive than the loss of the wear. Someone may think, oh, I'll buy another PC, they're cheap now. But think, it's the data.
Yes,
that's
the stuff
valuable.
You've got on there. Yeah. We're very nearly out of time, but I want to hear about your record of the week. Because I imagine that wireless headphones might be on a few Christmas gift lists this year.
Yeah. So I've chosen this pair from Soundcore, which is an anchor brand. And they're called Liberty 2. And they're what are known as total wireless earphones. They're a bit like Apple AirPods in that that not only does it not connect to, you know, your phone or the source of the music, but the earpieces don't connect to each other. They just pop into one ear and not the other. They don't have like a wire that goes between them around the back of your neck or anything. So they're hence the term totally wireless. And these ones are pretty special because they've got some nice technology in them. First of all, the quality is very good. Secondly, they've got something called Hear ID technology, which is essentially is an app that it effectively runs a hearing test on you to see which frequencies you're most sensing, where you're a bit, you know, a bit deaf, as it were, not you personally, obviously.
Of course, a bit clever.
And then it boosts the frequencies so that you get, you know, what's called a flat frequency response, so you hear all the music in the way that it was meant to be heard. So that's pretty good. It's got four microphones built into it. One of the problems with this sort of headphones is that it's often your voice to the other person, if you're using it for telephone calls, is poor because the microphone is attached to your ear because there's nowhere else it can be attached to. There's nothing else phones to attach the mic to. But what this says, it's got four headphones, which then is used to cut out the background noise as you speak and boost your own voice. So it sort of gives you more sort of crystal clear calls. It's got Bluetooth 5, which means you get much better range with it, much better quality. It uses a technology called Aptx, which you might know about because radio stations sometimes use that technology to allow their correspondents to communicate clearly over ISDN phone lines. So, you know, it's got all that. And these are normally £100. And the reason why I've come to them today is there's a Cyber Monday deal on Amazon at the moment where they are $69.99. So I think they're a bargain. And it's also good because that's one of the retailers where you get 30 days to return it if you're not happy.
Yes, you can.
Headphones tend to be, a bit of a personal choice.
Personal thing.
Yeah, so the only other thing I was going to say, Parallels Software is also on deal. They do a deal on it once a year. This is it, 20% off. Parallels is for Apple Mac users. It allows them to run Windows and other versions of Windows and Mac software on their machine. So one of the reasons I run a Macintosh is I run my Windows as a virtual machine on the Mac, which means I can use all the Mac gestures. I can transfer data between. And sometimes you've got software or hardware that only run on older versions of Windows, say. So you can just run that older version just to run with that, say, old accounting software or whatever, just so that you can still use old software. But it doesn't mean you have to live your life on sort of Windows XP or something, but you can just fire it up when you need to in a virtual machine. So that's Parallels, and it's 20% off at the moment, parallels.com.
If people want to get in touch with you on Twitter, how can they do that?
Come and say hello. I'm at Gadget Detective, and if you've got a problem or you need some buying advice, I'd be delighted to try and help.
Thank you so much. And if I didn't get around to your question, I'm really sorry.
BBC Sussex. Travel you trust.